I received an email. My wife actually received an email on Sunday night that said Mazel Tov. So we opened up the email. And what did it say? Osama bin Laden is dead. So you don't usually get an email saying Mazel Tov regarding somebody's death, but in that case I thought it was kind of appropriate. So, immediately, one of the things which came to my mind was this midrash which we were going to begin with in our discussion of rejoicing at the fall of the enemy. And lo and behold, when I actually looked it up, I realized, coincidentally, it's actually midrash on this week's parsha. So it was a nice little...
Not necessarily coincidentally.
Right.
Coincidence?
Okay.
I don't think so.
So let's take a look. What the midrash here does, and it's on the pasuk of Vishor, Osovius Benalos Ishchatu B'Yomachat, that an ox and a sheep, it and its child should not be slaughtered on the same day. If you think about it, it's an important lesson in terms of achzarius, or cruelty, that you're not erasing an entire family, even though it's animals that we're talking about, but just that concept that you're erasing an entire family, not to be done on the same day. So
even
right. So hold on. Okay, we'll get at this. So technically, you could make a korban of an animal on Tuesday and then shech its child on Wednesday, technically. Okay. Now, maybe you'll say, well, I just killed the parent yesterday. How could I do it today? But at least certainly on that day, not to do it. Now, but I think what you were referring to is how Haman was killed one day and his sons were killed on a different day. Is that what you were talking about? Okay. So we're going to look at the other side of Haman. And this is the story of the Midrash. We'll skip to the fourth line where it says Amar Rabbi Levi. Hey, Amar Rabbi Levi, it's the right after that period, close to the beginning of the fourth line. Amar Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Levi says, "Oy lahem l'rashayim shehim yis'amkin etzos ha'Yisrael. Woe is to the wicked ones who make these plans about Israel. Kol echad ve'echad omer atzasi yafe me'atzascha. Each one says, my etzah is greater than your etzah." Esav Amar Shote Hayakain Shaharag is Hevel Achiv Bachayev. Esav is the first one. Thank you. Esav is the first one. And he says, Cain was a fool. Why was Cain a fool? Because Cain killed Hevel while Adam was still alive. And we see that Adam procreates afterwards. He has another child. And he says, this one replaces Hevel. He has Shase, and it's in his image. He says, this child is replacing Hevel. Right, Esav says Cain was a fool. He didn't know his father could still have more children. So he says, "Ani eni osachein. I'm not going to do that." Ella, what was Esav's attitude towards destroying Yaakov? He says, "Yikrevu, you know." He doesn't say no, but Yikrevu, you may evil avi vargas Yaakov achi. That when the day comes my father dies, I will kill my brother.
This is
Midrash Tanchuma, and there's a number of midrashim also in parshas and more. Like the Vayikra Rabbah and the Psikta, they all quote this same idea. So he says, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to kill Yaakov after my father dies. And this way my father won't be able to have another Yaakov. Okay. Paro Amar, now we're smack in the middle of this whole section. Paro Amar, Shota Esav. Paro says, Esav was a fool. She Amar, Yikrevu, Yimei Evel Avi. He says, I'll wait until my father dies. Didn't Esav know that while he's waiting for his old man to croak, his brother, meanwhile, is building a huge family? Right? Yaakov has 12 sons and a daughter before Yitzchak dies. So Paro says, "Ani eni osachin. I'm not going to do that." Ella adeinon dekikin tochos korsia imason ana mechanek lahon. Says, as soon as the baby is born from its mother, I'm going to kill it. That any boy who is born is going to be thrown into the river. How much did Paro accomplish what he wanted to accomplish?
No.
Did he destroy the Jewish people?
No.
Haman Amar, Haman says, Shotai Paro. Paro was a fool. Right? Shamar, Kolaben Hayilod, Vachalabas Techayun. He says, Lo Yadesha Banos, Nos Ozar Hashem. He says, okay, so you killed all the boys, but you let all the girls live. Guess what? Girls have babies too. And once the girls have children, well, those children are still part of Bnei Israel. And what have you you haven't accomplished your goal. Haman, I'm sorry. Ani eni osachein, I'm not going to do that. Ella lahashmid laharog, labedis kol yidim yinarvetz lakein, tafnashim yamuchad. Haman's plan was to destroy all the Jewish people men, women, and children, all on one day. Did Haman accomplish his goal?
No.
A couple of days after he made his plan, he was a dead man, literally. I'm Rabbi Levi. Afgogu Magog. I said, Omar Kainer. Rabbi Levi was the one who introduced this whole idea. He says, even Gogu Magog is going to be doing the same thing. Gogu Magog is the term which we use to describe the events preceding the coming of Mashiach, the war to end all wars. Shotim Hayu Arishon and Gogu Magog is going to say, they were all fools. Shayu Ma'amikim Eishas HaYisrael, because they were trying to come up with great plans to destroy the Jewish people. Lo Hayu Yodim Sheish Lam Pitaron B'Shamayim. They didn't know that the Jewish people have a solution in heaven. Who's their solution in heaven? Their Father in heaven, right? God. And that's, if the bottom line is that God's going to protect them, then you make all the plans you want. They're not going to go anywhere. He says, Ani Eini Osechem, I'm not going to do that.
When you bring it all down, right?
Right. He says, Ani Eini Osechem, I'm not going to do what they did. Betchila as Daveg lepitronon. What I'll do is I'll make a treaty with God. And then V'achakach as Daveg lehem, and I'll make a treaty with them. Gogu Magog in the future. He says, Hado dechsiv Yisyasu Malchei Eretz Roznim Nos Tu Yachar Al Hashem V'Al Mashicho. He says that the kings of the world are going to make an agreement with God and His anointed one. Okay? That's a pasuk in Tehillim. Of course, Gogu Magog doesn't read two pasukim later, which says that God's going to make fun of them for doing so, and He's going to wipe them or destroy them for this ridiculous plan. Amar LaKadosh Baruch Hu, Russia, Li Basel Es Daveg. God's going to say to Gogu Magog, you fool. It doesn't mean fool, you wicked person. You're coming to make a treaty, a partnership with me. I'm going to fight a battle with you. You don't have a chance. Hashem ki gibor yitzei. God is like a warrior going out. God is going to go out and fight against those nations like on the day when you go out to battle. So the bottom line is that what this midrash is saying is that all of the enemies of the Jewish people, in whatever way they tried to destroy them, past or will try in the future, their plans can't work, because the bottom line is that God is protecting the Jewish people in some way. They can get close, they can do damage. I mean, Hitler certainly accomplished much, but he ultimately was unsuccessful. A sad commentary is that America, which loves the Jews, is doing a better job than Hitler.
Yeah.
In a different way, anyway,
that's
not my idea. I've heard it from a number of prominent thinkers. But in any case, so the question is: all these enemies, they all fell, right? They all fell and failed. So are we allowed to rejoice in their failure? The bottom line is, when they fail, that means that we're living, we're surviving.
Right.
So in the case of a guy like Osama bin Laden, so was his war against the Jewish people? Lav Dafka. I mean, he certainly was no fan of the Jewish people. His war was against the West and the Jewish people, as is the case of all these guys.
He made a comment about
it. I'm sure. Okay, fair enough. But I mean, so this class is, on the one hand, in the perspective of the Jewish people, and on the other hand, from the perspective of America. You know, I have a lot of people talking about, oh, should we show the pictures? Should we not show the pictures? Are we allowed to gloat over the fact, or are we allowed to be happy? I heard one guy say that all the gloating is not about. I heard one guy on the radio say today, there's no gloating. What we're saying is, we're proud of our Navy SEALs, we're proud of our country, and we don't care about this person who's gone, because we're not celebrating that he's dead. We're happy that our troops are safe, we're happy that this mission has been accomplished, and power to the USA. I think that's a fine attitude to have. And I think certainly from a Jewish perspective, that's also a proper attitude to have. So before we go into, there are a couple of psukim, particularly in Mishlei, which could be raised in the context of trying to understand this this topic. Before we look at the first one, I'm going to show you a Gemara, which raises the first one, and to just understand, at least to give us a preliminary understanding of what the of what that pasuk means. So let's take a look at the second source here, the Talmud Bavli Misachas Brachos. It's a story in the Gemara Brachos about Rava. I'll tell you outside, basically. I mean, Rava When he got sick, so the Gemara tells us that Rava said to his family, "Don't tell anybody that I'm sick, unless my because I might get better. But in the event that my sickness continues, you know, beyond a requisite amount of time, then you can go out into the marketplace and announce that Rava is sick." And what was his thinking? He said, "If you go out into the marketplace and announce that I'm sick, so it'll work for my benefit as far as everybody who hears about it goes. Those who don't like me, they'll be happy that I'm sick. Okay? And those who do like me will pray on my behalf." So, those who don't like him will be happy that he's sick. How would that be beneficial to him? So here's what he says. He says, he quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei, "Bin fol yivcha al tismach," that when your enemy falls, do not rejoice. That when your enemy falls, don't rejoice, and when he stumbles, let your heart not exalt. If God sees and is displeased and turns his wrath away from him. What's Rava's point? Rava's point is that if people don't like Rava and they're going to rejoice, well, they're going against what the Pasuk in Mishlei says. And if they're going against what the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Rava says, then perhaps that will serve as a merit for me. Because they're not doing the right thing, so God's not going to listen to them, and therefore it'll work like in a backwards kind of way in my favor, so that I can get better. Reverse psychology, and this way my enemies are working for my behalf, and certainly those who like me will be working on my behalf. And that, of course, introduces us to the idea of binfol oyivcha al tismach, when your enemy falls, not to rejoice, and that's the pasuk in Mishlei, which we just mentioned. Now, this pasuk is mentioned in Maseches Avos. I believe it's Shmuel HaKatan who mentions the pasuk and says it's an important teaching, that when your enemy falls, not to rejoice. And the question is, what does that mean? So, on that Mishnah, Rabbi Avarja Mavartinura says that why should you not rejoice when your enemy falls? The pasuk says, "Pen yir'a Hashem v'rabe inav," because God will see that you're rejoicing, and it will be bad in his eyes, and he'll turn his wrath away from your enemy. In other words, your enemy will have a chance to come back up because you're basically, not necessarily gloating, but you're rejoicing over something which is not your business to be rejoicing over. So Rabbi Avraham Vachanur says there, he says, "Sha'asiso bilvavacha ki'ilu hushluchacha l'malos tavascha." He says, if you are rejoicing, you're basically viewing God as if, in other words, if you have an enemy, and you're set, and you know, you may pray in your heart and mind, say, "God, you know, get rid of my enemy, do whatever you got to, just, you know, punish this guy, get him out of my life. I don't want to deal with him anymore. I don't want to see him." All of a sudden, it happens to this guy, and you go, "Ah, God, you listened to me, right? You're my medium. You took care of it. I asked you to." And God, and the Bartanura is saying, says, that's not an attitude you're supposed to have. God doesn't run his world for you. You know, you want somebody to get what my grandmother Allah Shalom used to call a double whammy. You want somebody to get that. All right, so either they deserve it or they're not. But just because you ask for it doesn't mean it's going to happen. If you're going to start assuming that you're the one who controls the cosmos, well, then it's going to come back at you. So don't do that. Okay. So now the question is, you know, that may be.
I got a problem with that. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, generally, if we daven for something we want, whatever it is, whether it's something financial, whether it's something with health, with a person who's sick, the concept is that it's not that our davening is going to be more than anything else, and Hashem's going to listen to us and nothing else, but it's, we don't know if everything else puts it right on that borderline, and maybe that tiny bit puts it over the line.
It's true, but there's a difference between asking for something which is beneficial to you versus something which is negative to somebody else. Okay, I think that's the fine point that we're distinguishing between. But then the next question we have to ask is, "Binpol yivcha tismach." So what's the definition of your oyev that may not that falls?
Oyev is not necessarily Russia.
Right.
You're allowed
to. So we're going to get to that. Right. Okay. So we're going to get to that. So let's take a look to see how a Russia take such a pasuk out of context. Okay? The Gemara Megillah tells us about Haman and Mordechai. After Achashverosh told Haman that he has to take Mordechai around the streets on the horse. So Haman, you know, he's going to be putting Mordechai into the king's clothes and riding Mordechai on the king's horse. So yeah, and Mordechai's been wearing ashes and sackcloth. Well, you got to bathe him. You got to cut his hair. You got so the Gemara says that I don't remember who ordered it to happen. If Mordechai had ordered it to happen, or whatever it was, or if Achashverosh actually ordered it to happen, it was everything to knock Haman down another step. Got rid of all the people who work in the bathhouse. And all the barbers, they were all called to some other, you know, whatever it is, party, asifas, barbers, or whatever it is. And so Haman had to do this stuff all by himself. Haman had to bathe Mordechai, he had to cut his hair, and at one point, while he's cutting Mordechai's hair, he lets out a crack, smack in the middle of the whole thing. Close to the beginning, rather. And so Amar Lei, Mordechai says to him, Maikam Nisnachas, why did you groan? I was the most honored person in Achashverosh's kingdom, and now I'm the bathhouse guy and I'm the barber. Amalei, so Mordechai says to him, Russia, why aren't you the barber for a long time in the city of Khartoum? Tana, and the Gemara quotes a Mishnah, I guess, or a Brisa, that says Haman Sapor Shel Kvar Kartzuma Yas from Mishnayim Shana, that in fact Haman was a barber for 22 years. That was his profession.
Where do we get this from?
This is a Gemara Megillah. So Basar Dishaflin Levazai Lushin of the Mane Amalei Sak Urchav. So he right before he led him around, so Haman said to Mordechai, "Get on the horse." Amalei lo yechilne, he says, I can't. Dekachisha chilai mimei tanisa, he says, I'm too weak from fasting. Kachin esalik, he says, you bend down, and I will climb up using your back as a step stool. So kisalik ba'atbe, when Haman bent down, Mordechai kicked him. Okay? So
Haman says,
right? So Haman says to him, hey, and I'm three lines from the bottom, Amalei lo ksivluchu bin polo yivchal tismach, doesn't it say that when your enemy falls, you shouldn't be happy? Amalei, so Mordechai says to him, Haman, you think you're such a Talmud Chacham, not a Talmud Chacham. He says, Hani Mili be Yisrael. Yeah, if it's your Oyev, if it's your enemy who's a Jew, when he falls, Al Tismach. Aval Bididchu, Ksiv Yatal, Don Mosei Mitzadroch. But regarding you, the non-Jewish enemy, it says, you shall tread upon their high places. Wherever they were, you were going to walk upon it. And that will show that you've defeated them. I remember a number of years ago hearing a certain fellow ask my father this question. Some person who he knew in business, who he had, you know, not a very good relationship with. The guy fell into dire straits, and I don't remember if he lost money or he lost his job. So this fellow was asking my father, not the one who had lost, but somebody who he didn't like fell. He says, you know, how should I feel about the fact that this happened to this guy who's just been giving me a lot of tsaras? So my father says, you know, just worry about yourself. And the guy's like, yeah, I know, when Polo Yuchal, I'll tismach, but I'm really feeling good about it, you know. So I says, you know, you really shouldn't feel good. You certainly shouldn't gloat, and, you know, keep it to yourself.
But that was saying about another fellow Jew.
Right, but that was the circumstance.
The
Jew, right. So, but Mordechai is saying, but if your enemy, who is a non-Jew, falls, again, we're not saying that all non-Jews are enemies, Chalila, but a person like Haman, who's looking to destroy the Jewish people, is obviously an enemy. So if that's the case, if he falls, so Mordechai says, yeah, I can rejoice in that, I can get pleasure out of that. Yeah.
So, Rabbi Yaakov was here last night. Mm-hmm. We were doing similar things, but we were doing the context of Orchot Tzadikim,
mm-hmm.
and we're doing Chanifas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's talking about you shouldn't even look at a Russia association with a Russia of any type.
Mm-hmm.
That you shouldn't even look at Russia. So obviously the conversation went to Osama.
Mm-hmm.
And is it wrong for me to really have wanted them to bring home his head on a totem?
Oh. So the extreme that you're going to go to is a different discussion, but we're at least talking about the fact can we celebrate or rejoice over the fact of his demise. So the specific details is perhaps beyond the scope of where I'm going tonight, but I hear your question. Okay, so anyway, any type of discussion in this in this issue.
There's precedence for what he says, because didn't your elder do that?
Is this right?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. So any time a discussion such as this comes up, so one of the things which is raised is the Gemara in Sanhedrin. I'm going to just mention it now in passing, but we're going to go into it in a little more detail in a little while, where the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, you know, at the time that the Jewish people were going through the sea, sitting in the sea, the angels, and not the angels, the Egyptians were drowning. So the Gemara tells us that the angels wanted to bikshu. Look at the phrase bikshu malachei asharis lamar shira lefnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu. The angels wanted to sing shira, to sing a song before God, and God says to them, "Maase yadai tovim b'yam v'atem arim shira lefnei." My creatures, the Egyptians, bottom line is, are humans, and humans are my creatures. They're drowning in the sea, or they're struggling in the sea, and you want to say, you want to sing shira? This is not an appropriate time. So basically, they were shut down. Okay, that's the angels. However, you know what happened after that? Is that the Bnei Yisrael sang shira. But what's the difference between then and this?
Well, they were getting Yeshua. They were getting saved. All right.
Hold on. Vayar Yisrael, es Mitzrayim, meis, al sefas hayam. So it's at the moment that they were drowning, that they are drowning right now. You want to sing shira? The angels are told, quiet. When it's over, and in the aftermath, the Egyptians are dead at the edge of the sea, it's over. There's nothing, you know, it's not like, they're not suffering anymore.
I like that.
They're not suffering anymore. So, and we know that as Yashir it's part of our daily prayer. So to say, A, that it's in the Torah, and obviously it's not problematic, the fact that it's in the Torah, and then the Chazal put it as part of our daily davening, so that would seem to indicate, in some way, that Az Yashir is viewed as something which is a good thing. To celebrate after the fact is not problematic. It's the angels who were shut down, but not the human beings who were shut down. Okay, but not only that, there are other cases which we'll see momentarily. There are other cases where people who were meant to actually sing Shira and didn't sing Shira, that they were criticized for not having done it. Okay, we'll get to that soon. So what's the other side? So we saw the pasuk initially says "Bin polo yivchal tismach," when your enemy falls, and we've defined the enemy in that case, the enemy who falls, to be a Jewish enemy that you're not supposed to rejoice over. On the other hand, we have a pasuk in Mishle, Perikid Aleph, it says, "Betuv tzadikim ta'alotz kirya, uba'avod rishaim rina." When it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices, and when the wicked perish, there is song, or there is rejoicing. Okay? So, now of course, note the difference. There are a few differences. But the phrase that we're focusing on, of course, ba'avod rishaim rina, that when the wicked fall, there's rejoicing. So we have been... I'm sorry, not fall, okay? It's ba'avod when they're destroyed. So you have bin pol o yivcha, when your enemy falls, but falls means he can come back up. O yivcha, your enemy, okay? But your enemy might not be a bad guy, he just, you know, it's like a business enemy, if you will. And then al tismach, don't be happy. On the other side, we have bin pol. I'm sorry, not bin pol, ba'avod. Ba'avod means when is destroyed. Rishaim, we're talking about a wicked, wicked person. And Rina, there is rejoicing. Okay, which is different than not being happy. In other words, I can for myself, if my enemy falls, I can be like, okay, I'm going to move on. Now, that is what it is, and I'm going to move on. But this is an action verb, Rina, to literally be rejoicing when the enemy perishes. When the wicked person perishes. So what are we to make of that? So the Yalkut Shimoni, last week's parsha, asks this question. He says, "Well, what's the difference?" Ki yosef b'davar tamer ben pol yivchal tismach lala nomer b'avodu shem rina. Ketzad yiskayim u'shnek suvim. We have a contradiction. Don't rejoice when the enemy falls. Rejoice, or don't be happy when the enemy falls. Rejoice when the wicked is destroyed. So what does it mean? So he says, how do we do it? Talmud Chacham shenitzchacha ayom b'halacha u'bal yad adavar l'machar al tismach lo. Right? Somebody beats you in a Torah argument today, so he becomes your oyev. In other words, your rival. Right? And then tomorrow he loses or something happens. Like, I got you today. I got you. Like, no, that's, you know, that's al tismach. Say, okay, no, it's yesterday was your day, today's my day, but I'm not rejoicing over it. I'm not having simcha over it. Okay? That's the first side. Pen yirei Hashem v'rabbe inav. You're gloating over this. How petty can you be? On the other hand, in Ra'isa Adam Yisrael, she wrote Sebra Asoshal Chaviro, Zeu Rasha Gamur. She says, if you see a member of the Jewish people who wishes evil upon their friends, this is a completely evil person. So he says, Bavod Risha Imrina could be referring to a Jewish person who is actually a really bad guy. It's one thing to say, look, you know, today was your day, you know, we have a healthy rivalry, and one day you win, another day I win, and that's okay, that's fine. But the person who literally wants people to suffer, wants people to be in pain, that's a Russia. And for that, when that person is destroyed, again, it doesn't necessarily, at least in defining it as a Jew, doesn't necessarily mean that they have to die. But it means
that, defining it as exclusively a Jew, you're saying it could be either?
No, I'm just saying the Al Kachimoni says that if it's an Adam Yisrael, who wrote Sebra Aso, in other words, if it's an evil Jew,
okay, it could be an evil Jew. He's not defining Russia as exclusively a Jew, he's saying it could be a Jew also.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Now, so that is certainly one perspective. However, there are a couple of Gemaras in Sanhedrin which have at least suggest a different perspective with regard to rejoicing over the destruction of the enemy. Okay, and the second one, actually this is basically the last, it's just about the last Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's the last page of Sanhedrin, which is a short Amud. And this is what the Gemara says. So you turn over the page. As long as the wicked are in the world, God's anger is in the world. Who are the wicked? So Rabbi Yosef said, thieves. Now I would take Rabbi Yosef to task, because I think he's living, at least in this perspective, with a kind of myopic view. But in any case, that's certainly one way to look at it. But he's trying to explain things in the context of the Gemara. And so one way to look at wicked people are thieves. I think that in our day and age, we have a deeper understanding than Rabbi Yosef is at least suggesting here of what is real wickedness. In any case, the Gemara continues and says, Tana Rabbanan, Rasha Baal Le'olam, Charon Baal Le'olam. When a wicked person comes to the world, divine anger comes to the world. Shneamar, Bevo Rasha, Bo Gamboz, Ve'im Kalon Cherpa. Okay, that as it says, with the coming of a wicked person comes derision to, and with shamefulness, disgrace. Rasha avad mina olam, if a wicked person is perishes from the earth, tova ba'al olam, good comes to the world. Shneamar u'avod u'sha'im rina. So he uses our pasuk in Mishlei to say that when the wicked are gone, then it's an opening for goodness in the world. I mean, lahavdil. One thing which I noted, you know, when the news of Osama bin Laden came out, and I thought this was important, because the question which I kept on thinking of, you know, is whenever these terrorist attacks happened, when 9/11 happened, when the Fogel family was killed, so the images that you saw in the streets in certain Arab areas was people rejoicing. So what are they rejoicing over? The death of innocent people, okay? And that's what they're celebrating. And to me, that strikes me as just being, forget about evil or wicked. You're totally warped in your thinking. So I was thinking, as I'm watching the crowd gather around the White House, right? What are they doing? They're not going, yay, so-and-so is dead. They're screaming, USA, USA. And I think that's a major difference. What we're saying is, we're proud of who we are. And we're not gloating over that. Nobody cares about this guy. Nobody cares about him. His death, he's had a death warrant since 9/11. And he's, you know, who cares if he was dangerous, not dangerous, if he was armed, not armed, it doesn't matter. The point is that at this stage of the game, he's a symbol. And when he's gone, that symbol is, to a degree, put to rest. Thank God. Okay? But what are we talking about? And I actually saw tonight, this afternoon, I saw a different video through matzav.com, which is one of these Jewish websites, where they show, where they were linked to it was actually a Mets game. It was late at night. It was the ninth inning. The score is 1-1. And all of a sudden you hear around the stadium people doing, USA, USA, because they must have put on the screen the news that the president had just announced.
Sunday night?
Yeah, Sunday night. Again, but it's
been so many people have it on.
Oh, whatever. Okay, I'm saying, but it doesn't matter. In other words, people knew, and the point is,
years ago, people went with the transistor radios.
Right.
They play in Philly that night.
Okay, whatever it was. But the point is that's a way. That's a positive way, I think, of expressing Rina. That we're not gloating about the deceased. Who cares about the deceased? The deceased is irrelevant to us, especially once the deceased is dead.
Right, right.
Okay, what do we joy about? Who we are, our power, our strength, and what we stand for. Now, I mean, I don't like to quote the president, but one thing which he said was that perhaps we can revert back to the solidarity which exists in this country after 9/11.
Yeah.
I think that's a nice. Message, something which hopefully people can relate to. Right, anyway, let's move on to the next Gemara. And this Gemara is the fuller context of the Masiyah that I told them Bayam. So the Gemara tells us, quoting a pasuk in Malachim, Aleph, that when the king Achav died, and Achav was a wicked guy. I mean, he was Jewish, but he was a wicked guy. So the joyous proclamation, the joyous proclamation spread throughout the camp when he died. So Rav Acha said, when the wicked perish, there is joy. Right? He quotes our pasuk from Mishlei, and that refers ba'avod Achav ben Omri Rina. Right? He says that what's Risha? What's the definition of a Rasha? Achav ben Omri. Achav the son of Omri. Okay. Now, so imi chadi kutzav brichu b'mapalas and shal rishayim. Does God really see, or does God foretell the? Does God rejoice rather at the downfall of the wicked? Haksiv, it says, but says lefnei chalutz ve'omrim hodu l'Hashem ki li'olam chasdeo. It says they go out before the army and they say, give thanks to God for His kindness lasts forever. Am Rabbi Yonasan b'nei ma lo ne'mar b'hoda azo ki tov. How come it doesn't say there in Divrei Yamin hodu l'Hashem? You know, whenever we say hodu l'Hashem, we say hodu l'Hashem ki tov ki li'olam chasdeo. It only says hodu l'Hashem ki li'olam chasdeo. And he says because it's in the context of the fall of an enemy. And there it says, why is Kitov left out? Because God doesn't rejoice over the fall of the wicked. So I'm Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman. I'm Yonos Amaytech Siv V'lo Karav Zel Zekol Laila Ba'os Hashabik Shumalach Hasharis. Right, when the Torah says that this one did not approach this one all night, which seems in the Pashut Pshat to be referring to the Bnei Israel on the one side and the Egyptians on the other side, he says that when they're actually in the sea, Ba'os Hashabik Shumalach Hasharis Lamar Shira V'Negash Baruch Hu, the angels wanted to say Shira. God said, they're currently drowning, and you want to sing Shira? Amar Rabbi Yosi Bar Chanina, who ain't osas, aval acherim mesis. God doesn't rejoice when the enemies are falling, but others may rejoice. In other words, perhaps in a slightly different twist than the Pshat I mentioned earlier, God is saying, angels, look, you're right in front of me. Okay, I don't want to hear it. But the people, they're down on earth, is a little more distant.
But they're also getting Yeshua. They're getting
right.
Yeshua.
Right.
It's Lahavdil, when two children are fighting, and the parent targets one as culprit.
Right.
The other one's a little unhappy. Almost all the time.
Yes.
The parent says, you go to your room too.
Right.
You know, the same kind of thing.
Right. It's an interesting idea that you have God here, saying, or at least the Gemara leaving it open to say that God is saying, yeah, angels, you can't rejoice, but at the same time, I do want people to rejoice somehow, or I want there to be a rejoicing. I want to allow that. I want to allow for that possibility. So with that, I'm sorry, what?
The Torah in general doesn't, except in one case where I find it very difficult. But Torah in general doesn't dictate our emotions.
Well, the half does Hashem
Lekach. Yeah, there's that one, and there's the other one. Billy Bo, I'll don't hate somebody.
That's not Sechicha
B'Lavecha, right? Those two. Other than that, generally that the Torah doesn't dictate emotion. Emotion is what separated David from Shlomo from Shaul. They say that.
Right. Okay.
And that's where the Malchus, that's where the Helen comes from, that's where so the Shira, that's where Shira comes from.
And so what's your point there?
There's a spiritual height that emotion brings you to. And there's got to be availability for that.
Absolutely.
And that's
the next point which we're going to get to in the Shira, Shira and Rabba. Now, the thing which I have here is, this is number 10, but which is number 10, is the Gemara Brachos, which talks about the question of the creation of the Bracha of Lam Al Shinin. Right, the Bracha of Lam Al Shinin, which is against the heretics. Right? The heretics were the ones who wanted to destroy the Jewish people. So the rabbis wanted to make a bracha to say, let them not have a shot. So who created the bracha? Shmuel HaKatan. Shmuel HaKatan was the one who taught everybody, Bin Polo Yivchal Tismach. So in other words, it was Shmuel who was able to bring to the table something which nobody else was able to formulate in a way that they felt was appropriate. Really, what are we talking about? We're talking about the destruction of enemies, of real enemies. The point that we could take from that Gemara is that there is a time and place for everything. Certainly not for gloating, but if you're dealing with people who really want to see your demise, right? We're not talking about, like we said before, Paul Yivchal Tismach is one type of person, but perhaps on the other perspective, Avod Rishayim Rina. That you, when you're talking about people who are real rishayim, really wicked people, so there needs to be the possibility for addressing their role. And a bracha in Shemona Esrei of all places indicates to us that their destruction, their demise, is something which we not only actively seek, but we're looking to bless God on a daily basis to see that actually takes place. So if that's what we're looking for. And certainly when it does take place, should we not say thank you? Should we not rejoice over the fact that it has taken place? Okay, so that leads us into this question of what happens if you don't sing Shira? If you don't rejoice? So the Midrash in Shira Shirim tells us about Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu should have said Shira over the fall of Sancheriv. Sancheriv was the one who had destroyed the kingdom of Israel. Chizkiyahu was one of the kings of Judah. And when Sancheriv fell, so the kingdom of Yehuda was able to survive for a while longer until Nebuchadnezzar came along. As it's written, but Chizkiyahu did not render according to the benefit he had received, for his heart has lifted up. So we know Chizkiyahu was a righteous king, yet it is written that his heart has lifted up, so he's haughty. It means his heart was haughty and he did not say Shira. Yeshayahu came to him and said, sing to God. He answers, why? For he's done mighty things. Chizkiyahu said, it's already known throughout the land. I don't need to sing. People know it already. Rabbi Levi said, Chizkiyahu said, why should we say, or retell the greatness and miracles of God when it's already well known from one end of the world to the other? Hasn't the sun stood still in the center of the heaven and God's miracles were seen from one end of the world to the other? You don't need it. If everybody knows about it, you don't need to talk about it. Well, we're told elsewhere that Chizkiyahu could have been Mashiach, but on account of the fact that he didn't sing Shira at this point, he lost out on that opportunity. Right. So the point is that if something good happens, and in this case we're talking about the destruction of a real enemy, Sancheriv brought tremendous havoc and desolation, certainly to those who are known now as the lost 10 tribes, and just to Am Yisrael in general through what he did. So when he fell, you got to sing Shira. You got to rejoice again after the fact, not during. Right? We don't want to say, but when they're tovim bayam, you don't want to say it. But at the same time, after the fact, look, you're alive. How do you not sing Shira? How do you not appreciate what has happened? So, to make the parallel, was the individual dangerous anymore? He's off in a bunker in hiding. Is he personally dangerous to anybody? We can make the argument yes or no. It doesn't matter. But at the same time, we know what he represented. He was a symbol. And if a person is a symbol, and that symbol is no longer, then perhaps there's certainly room, just as Sancheriv, who, did Hitler ever actually kill a Jew himself? We don't know what Hitler did. Hitler was a guy in an office who made speeches, and he had all his lackeys do the bad work for him. Does that mean that we didn't rejoice when he was dead? Thank God. I mean, everybody was singing in the streets when Hitler was dead. So similarly with this lowlife, I think that we can apply a similar attitude, that we can rejoice. Again, not gloating about his specific death, But the fact that we are here and that we have accomplished what we've accomplished and there's what to talk about, so that is something worthy of saying Shira. So one of my colleagues, Rabbi Akiva Block, pointed out this comment in the Yabia Omer, which is one of the tshuvas of Rabbi Avadia Yosef, who quotes the Chida, who has the diuk, which I mentioned before, which you like the pshat, which I thought of before I saw this and before I heard it from him, but it's the, you know, it's that idea which we saw before. It's that he says, skip to the middle or skip to the end of the first line. The Amrinan Masiyad I told Meyam I told him Shir Hanimili Beidna Dirischa BaOsa Shalash Nidonim. We're talking that when is God upset that they're singing Shira? Only during the time of God's anger, when the Egyptians are actually being judged. But after it's over, and they're dead, so the point is, you know, again, just to summarize the point home, that we're certainly not talking about during the fact, right? Oh, they're bombing such and such city. Ah, awesome, yeah. That's inappropriate. Let the dust settle, see what has happened, and if you've achieved the result which you've achieved, and you're free now, and you've achieved your liberty, your freedom, whatever it may be, then at that point in time, it's okay to say, I'm going to rejoice. But it's not over their fate. We're not rejoicing over their death and their destruction. Everybody knows that it's their death and destruction. I mean, on the other side, you know, I mean, maybe that's what Hezekiah was saying. Why should I sing Shira if everybody knows what happened? No, because the Shira isn't that you're saying, oh, thank you for killing them. The Shira is that you're saying, thank you for saving me. And the fact that they mention in Shira Sayam what happened to the Egyptians, that's not the focus. It's all about what God did. You have to mention what God did, but it's not about what God did as much as it's about what God is and what God has accomplished for us. In other words, the end result, not the means to achieve that end result. We're not gloating over the death of the Egyptians. We don't care about the Egyptians. We're not gloating over the death of bin Laden. We don't care about bin Laden. But we're saying, now that this result has been achieved, the world is a better place. The world is a safer place. We feel vindicated. The victims of 9/11 and their families feel a bit of closure. You know, it's something which we've been looking forward to. So at this point in time, you know, is it worthy of singing Shira? One discussion. Is it worthy of saying, I'm happy at this result? I think that it's certainly worthy of saying, that we can, you know, rejoice in some way, again, not in a gloating way, but rejoice in some ways at the result which has been achieved because of where we stand, you know, in the aftermath of what has taken place.
Well, I said how long the past 2 days.